This is the Future Leads podcast, and this episode is Working in Leeds. And today we are joined by the Office Working Group in Leeds. Morning.
Good morning.
Morning. So I think the first thing I just want to do is congratulate you all. So today's Tuesday. So was that 2/5 of the working week completed? So I think that's worth a round of applause. So, and you will either like or not like this. I found this quote, I'm sure you've heard it before. Do what you love, love what you do. Do we like that? Do we feel that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah? Okay, it's a good start. That's a Mike's gone quiet.
Are you not feeling the love?
We'll come into that, and that might be part of the conversation as well. However, what we're about to talk about, it affects a lot of people. You might know more than me. I did a little bit of research. About 500,000 people working in Leeds. Don't know if those figures are accurate. That's the closest I could find.
A Chamber of Commerce figure.
It might have been. Yeah. So the first thing I'd like to do before we get into it is just go around the table, and if you could just introduce yourself, your name and what you do. Mark, are you happy to kick us off?
Mark Goldstone, Head of Policy, Western North Yorkshire Chamber of Commerce.
Tom Hodgson, I'm a leisure agent at a firm called Pudney Shuttleworth in Leeds.
I'm Rob Kilner. I'm exploring and researching a project called Workers' Lunchtime.
Juliet Fisher. I'm a legal director at a law firm called Hill Dickinson in Leeds.
Kate Roberts. I'm the operations assistant at Leeds Bid.
And Vicky Freestone, and I'm the business executive at Leeds Bid.
I'm Nick Selkeld. I'm a chartered surveyor and director at Fox Lloyd Jones, commercial surveying practice in Leeds.
Lovely, great stuff. And as I said, my name's Simon McCaskill, aware of Leeds Boost, and taking pictures at the back there is Victoria from Leeds Boost as well. I'm just going to pose three questions and I'm going to put it over to you guys. But the first one I want to talk about is environment. Okay, working in Leeds environment. Here's a quote. I'm working from home because I need to get stuff done. What's our reaction to that quote?
I think I can identify with that.
Yeah? Have we heard it before?
Yeah,
I think I've said it before.
You've said it before, we're all guilty of that. Yeah. First impressions when you hear that, when someone says that to you?
It suggests you can't get anything done at work.
I think it depends on the type of work you're doing. So
I agree.
If you're, like as I often am, bogged down in spreadsheets with the phone going in my office, I'd rather be at home, just get that out of the way, done. It's quicker to do it where it's quiet.
You can focus, can't you,
right,
sometimes?
Yeah.
It suggests the office environment is quite a busy, active place and distracts you from being able to concentrate on whatever that output is needed. So we're seeing more and more actually in office design that they're putting in these private work booths and, you know, enclosed soundproof pods and so forth that maybe offsets some of that.
I suppose office design, though, has evolved, hasn't it, over the years to become more and more open plan. It's now quite unusual. I think even bosses don't tend to sit in their own office space anymore. They want to sit in with everybody else. And that's brilliant. And I think that's great for collaboration. I certainly enjoy it in the office when we're having a bit of a laugh about things. Because you don't get that at home. When you're a home worker or a part-time worker like I am, that's some kind of camaraderie that you miss out on. But you're absolutely right, I've tried to sit there with a spreadsheet before and it is impossible to do it when everyone's chatting.
So it does bring me to the question. So you have got the full-time fixed desk workers, if you like, that use quotes like this that say, I need to get home because I need to get stuff done because the environment maybe isn't conducive to it. And then you've got those startups and those independent businesses that race to these co-working spaces. And we see the rise of WeWork, Spaces, Avenue HQ, Santander Work Cafe, etc. So the question is, why do we work from home? And should we be thinking differently about our office environments? So, Nick, you went there already, talking about the office environment. So do we need to be thinking differently about these environments?
Absolutely, 100%. We're experiencing it on behalf of several clients and also looking at it ourselves as an organisation and how that environment, you know, I guess, invites and ensures we get the best work done within that space. So yeah, it's evolving at a rapid rate. I think there's a number of factors that that feed into that office environment, how it's been thought of differently from certainly generational perspective and the millennial generation that's sort of starting to come through and sort of take almost leadership roles within certain organisations now, and also the fact that office environments are being used for businesses as a, I guess, a tool to attract talent, retain talent, promote well-being, you know, increase productivity, all of those kind of things are feeding into, and properties becoming, or the office environment within office-based organisations becomes such a key tool now for businesses and a huge part of where they want to go as an organisation. So it's a really interesting topic.
Mm. I think the other thing that the office environment, because, you know, we've been able to work from home for years, and we can, you know, we can dial into meetings if we wanted to, but, you know, so why haven't offices all but gone away? And the answer is, we are social animals.
Yeah.
And I think that's the bit sometimes that we forget, and it's a horrible American phrase, but water cooler moments. It's those chance conversations, things overheard, things just you're bumping into somebody, oh, how's your day going? Oh, it's this, that, oh, really? And all of a sudden things happen.
Depends on your role, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
If you're if you're one of those roles where you need to be speaking to people to find out things to then go on and achieve something, usually it helps to be with others in a room that are like-minded and doing the same thing. And if you're at home, sometimes you can just get stuck in a rut a bit, and you're not really as productive as you could be if you're not speaking to the right people.
Yeah. I think it's about learning as well. Certainly in sort of my profession, it's sort of learning by osmosis. That's not a very good term, but actually it's really good for people to be among people that are doing things, because they can hear what they're saying, they can pick up on bits of conversation, you know, that might help them learn something, it might give them a different perspective. And also, of course, you know, there's also the thing about not having a fixed desk in a fixed space. So, you know, moving around the office, sitting in different teams, sitting with different people, you know, learning from them, understanding what people do. I think that it teaches you a lot of skills, you know. And I'm with sort of Vicky, really. I quite like being around people, you know. So I do think it's a really positive thing to have people in an environment.
Even overhearing someone on the phone talking about something can remind you to do something that
Exactly.
And increasingly, certainly in big cities like Leeds, you get lots of organisations that have multidisciplinary functions within the same office. And the danger is, if you all sit with people in your team, you do get a bit siloed in your thinking. And it's that chance overheard. Legal sector is very good at this, actually, in terms of, you know, you could have several different departments all dealing with the same client, and perhaps sometimes not even being aware that your HR department is dealing with them and your planning department is dealing. And actually, if you're all mingling,
exactly,
you know, you might find that there are other opportunities that have been missed.
Yeah.
You know, the mapping out the white space, somebody wants to describe it to me.
And people just work in different ways as well, and people just have different approaches. And I just think witnessing that and being part of that, and just, you know, we've all got our work to do, of course we have, but you just see things happen, and it maybe does make you just think about something in a different way. And from your business as well, you understand the business then, not just the clients that you have and the work that you do, because as you say, you know, it's not just about one client in one team, you know, there's a bigger picture. So,
I think this quite relates to someone that has a specific task that they need to do, no distractions, they don't want to hear anyone else, they want to do that task, but that's not always what people need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the other thing to think about, though, is work. You know, if you look at it on a very practical level, why do we work from home? Well, I work from home at least once a week, and particularly if I'm doing a half day, I work from home, because the reality is that's an hour and a half of commuting time that I can then choose to spend that time doing something differently. So whether that's that I'm spending that time working, or whether it's actually that I'm spending that time on something that needs to happen. So it enables me to drop my daughter off at school and pick her up on a Friday and still work in the middle. And I tend to save my time for the quiet, focused jobs on Friday, kind of clear the decks, and then I can come back in, refresh the next week and do all the lovely interactive stuff. Mm. Meetings like this, collaborations like this would be harder to do, I think, even with technology, if it was a day I was working at home. So there's quite a few aspects about it, more than just the design of the office and what happens when we're in the office. It's about the setup of all of our lives, and flexible, genuine flexible working, and women in the workplace, and all sorts of other things going on too. Not a simple, I'm sorry, Sam, it's not a simple question.
I didn't expect it to be a simple answer.
And it isn't half helpful to realise who some of your clients are. Oh, I didn't know we were dealing with them, as I found out the other day.
Yes.
It's quite a prestigious client.
Yes, well. Yeah.
So a little follow-on question to that. And this is a safe space. No one's listening or watching or anything like that. We'll see. Has anybody achieved it? So is anybody working in a business now where you think, we've got this right? Our work environment is the best place to be. I can get stuff done when I need to. I can collaborate when I need to. I can be productive. It's gone quiet.
I don't think it'll always be a work in progress. You know, our organisation is relatively small, but we operate out of 7 locations. You know, just getting a staff meeting, an all staff meeting together, even with technology, can be difficult. But you know, I think we're on the right trajectory.
You've got very wide geographical coverage of your staff, haven't you?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think a lot of it is less about asking for permission sometimes to do it. So I work for a relatively young organisation. You know, we're making the culture of the business. And so, you know, I joined as a part-time worker, and to a degree I kind of structure my week how I want. And whether that might benefit someone like Kate, who's relatively new to the business, that she can see I'm just getting on with it and it's working fine. Mm. I don't know what you think, Kate.
Well, I think the fact that we're such a small team is really helpful, because we do collaborate, and we operate in exactly the same room, all of us. Mm. So that's really useful, because just communication is really clear all the time. And yeah, it's easy to recognise when someone's busy and when they just want to get on with it, and we let them do that. And I think the teamwork in the office is really strong. But I think that might be less about environment and more about the fact that we are a small team. I don't know.
Is it, what do people think? Is it harder when you start scaling things up away from 12 people as we are too? You've worked for a big organisation, you have as well, Rob. You know, several floors of a building, do you lose some of that communication anyway?
I think you do. I think you just have to make more of an effort, I would say. I think you have to think about what you do and what you're trying to achieve, and try and, you see, I can never understand, and this isn't part of the question, but you know, people that will send an email from one side of the office to the other, I just think, why don't you just get off your chair? I just think, go and talk to people. You know, it's a good thing to do, but everybody doesn't work in that way, so that's just a personal view. I think if you have a small team, it's easier, but it's not unachievable if you work for a big organisation. There's no reason why you can't, you know, collaborate and work together and work alongside each other well. I don't think it's
I worked for a big organisation in a previous job, and we did. That was one of the features of our work: people emailing each other over the same room. And then, if you were taking, so it's about communication, isn't it? Either good or bad communication. And if you had a document to send to someone on the floor above or below, you didn't take it down. You put it in an envelope, and someone came and
with a
took
trolley.
It, and it would get there tomorrow or something.
Yeah.
And you know, there's something. Yeah. There's something efficient about that if it's done in timely, but you also lose that human touch, which you can get a lot of those from those moments that you're not expecting, people just having a chat or
My firm's really small. It's 5 of us in a room, no bigger than this room, and we still might email each other because they might be on the phone or they might be in the middle of something. You don't want to disturb them, so you only get up and, or we just shout across the room and wouldn't even get out of a chair. But sometimes it's just the right thing to do, just to say, when you've got a minute, can we discuss this? But yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how big or small the company is, it can still happen that way.
I think it's a useful tool. It can be a useful tool, email, but it can also be the opposite.
We've got a bit of email fatigue, haven't we, I think, going on. Very full inboxes.
Yeah. I think from our perspective, similar to Tom's, as a sort of 15 to 20 person business, and as a surveying practice, we often have to have the email trails and printed documents on file, so there's always a conscious effort, I think, to maintain that. But again, we're evolving, or certainly trying to evolve as a 15-year-old business, to try and adapt and sort of pick up on some of these new features of, I guess, the workspace environment and so forth. And I think there's good examples of very, very large organisations. I think of Walker Morris, who we helped move recently, have completely changed their environment from cellular offices for the partners into open space, open plan workspace, to a ratio of desk to headcount as well. So there's only, I don't know, 70 or 80% of desk to the volume of people. So it's very much agile working. But then equally, on that smaller scale that we touched on, I think it's probably easier to adapt at the early stages of business's growth at startup scale up perspective. For us, it's probably more challenging. We're 15 years in, and I think we've kind of somewhat set in the ways that have always existed. Yeah. And we're now trying to sort of put focus on systems and data integration and putting things like that at the forefront. It's hugely important, and I think, as I said earlier, it's becoming a key business feature, and also giving staff that ability to and almost confidence to say, I need to work from home, or I need to leave at three to do this, or and that actually you're still getting the same output and productivity regardless of time at a desk itself.
Historically,
there's always been that.
What's productive?
Presenteeism.
Yes, exactly.
I used to work with a guy who always left his jacket on the back of his chair. Yeah,
brilliant.
Classic move. Yeah.
He suggested it to me. When you get to my age, well,
I've got three on the back of mine at all times. It keeps falling backwards.
Are those times gone? Are those times changing? Are we still seeing this?
I still hear it sometimes from someone, you know, that I might be married to about, I've not been in the office for a few days, so I need to check in. And I'll say, well, do you need to check in? Because could it be more productive to do that task at home? And, yeah, a slight fear, I think, sometimes if you've gone AWOL for maybe a week,
and that
that's too long.
That culture's still there as well, as if you're a bit poorly, just, I need to be in. It's not the end of the world if you stay at home and you don't give your germs to everyone else in the office.
That's what I thought you were going to say when you first saw that quote, or someone's on the beers the night before or something like that, you know, what you think about a colleague, but there's a stigma that goes with it, isn't there? And I'm going to move it on, but I think it's really interesting. When I thought about this question, I thought it would be more the physical environment, and you're, Nick, obviously a lot more around property, and your answer was there. What I'm hearing is actually culture and technology a little bit, i.e. email, you know, and how we're using these tools as maybe we should be using these
just
tools.
Before you move on, so here's a be careful what you wish for conversation. So we had a meeting with BT quite a few years ago, who said they have this techie creche in Ipswich in their lab, and basically what they said was, can you automate everything in your house? Can it all be digitized? And then somebody jokingly said, what about a toilet? And and he said, it can, actually. And so I won't go into the gory detail, but basically, if you have been out on the lash the night before, your toilet can tell the doctor, who can then tell your workforce and your boss the real reason why what I'm saying is
you've been warned.
Do you know what, Mark, that was actually quite nicely done. The next slide is about the next generation. Now, I didn't anticipate it being smart toilets, but I guess it is related. So the quote here is that when we think about the next generation and in the working world, 40% of tasks will be automated. 40% of your day-to-day, depending on your role, will be automated. What do we think about that quote standalone?
Well, I saw Rob tweeting about how, you know, who predicted the 50 years ago someone predicted we'd be doing like a two-day working week, didn't we? We at the Thrive conference.
Economist Keynes.
Keynes.
It was 15-hour week, I think.
Okay.
And it was wrong for most people. But yeah, I mean, 40% of tasks. I mean, I did a lot of stapling at work. I'd be happy for that. But also, a lot of the tasks I was doing felt like they were I was automated in a particular job I had. And that might have been because I knew what I was doing. I'd done it so many times. You know, it would have been useful to have a robot doing it and I could learn something new.
So that's really interesting. I think what you've just said really resonated with me, because it felt systematic to you, automated to you. Chances are, in this world we live now with technology, AI, machine learning, chances are, because you felt that, a machine could take that over, regardless of what it is.
I'm surprised that number's so small, actually.
If we are replacing the things we do with automation, you know, does that mean we fill our time with more tasks? You know, just because these are going.
So if we're on the subject of stats, so 65% of people in school will have a job that actually doesn't exist right now. That's a scary thought. I gave this talk at a school I'm involved with last year to parents, and you goes, nah, what are you talking about? I said, who's got a smartphone? Every single hand went up. It didn't exist. It actually was the 14th anniversary of the iPhone the day I gave this talk. And you think, you know, think of all the jobs that's created that you never would have dreamt of 14 years ago. You know, app developers didn't exist. Yeah. It's a massive industry for this city now.
But I don't think my job existed, and I'm not talking about, you know, because Leeds Big didn't exist. I think, to a degree, some jobs are created because there's a need for that job. So if I went back in time, how would I prepare myself for doing this job? Well, I kind of did because of the way my career went, but I think it would be impossible to be a child today and be thinking about what the workplace might look like. I think even in 2 years' time, when you're looking for a job, possibly that job may not exist. It's so rapid, the change, isn't it?
Mm. But alongside that as well, it's the jobs. There are also jobs that are disappearing.
Mm.
Yeah. There are new jobs, but alongside that, loads and loads of jobs are also disappearing at probably at the same rate, which that quote suggests.
So what came with that quote was about Generation Z, saying that this is one of their biggest fear. Their biggest fear is that they pick a career path now and it's a dead end, basically. It's something that's not there.
So I think, actually, there's a role for the education sector here, and all of us, actually, is to say there isn't a, you know, we've had that phrase, there isn't a job for life. I think you would extend that to say there isn't a career for life either. And I think the data says we'll have something like six different careers, not jobs, careers.
Wow.
Wow. Our lifetime, yeah.
But then do you embrace that? You know, that's not something to be afraid of. It's quite interesting. Mm. It's much more about your skills and your resilience to change, isn't it, rather than the technical knowledge that you're accruing along the way.
And therefore, how do we prepare young people for this? Because the current secondary education system doesn't do that. In fact, it does the absolute opposite.
Yeah.
Just narrows people down a single channel or a narrow channel, not a single channel.
It's more about social and creative skills rather than regimented exams and maths and things like that.
I also think that it depends how you look at it, because a lot of people, you know, I'll probably include myself in this sometimes, you know, it's not, a lot of people think automation is going to replace something. It doesn't always have to replace something. It can enhance something, yeah. Exactly. And actually, if you talk about sort of careers and things, remember when I was at school, you know, I was going to do one of two things. I have actually ended up doing one of them, surprisingly. But, you know, you've always been pushed down a path, I think, in a way. But, you know, we have lots of work experience and young people that come along to do placements and things. And they're so more switched on than I was when I was that age. And things have changed. And that's a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I think automation will take over some of my job, definitely. And that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges to our sector at the moment, trying to work out how you can add value and do some of these tasks in a better way. And you can free up your time to do other stuff and do different types of things. So I think it's just a lot of it's about mindset, and I don't think you can change that immediately. So it sort of links into our last question as well. It's a bit of it's something that evolves, and you just have to sort of, it takes a bit of time, I think, for people to buy into it.
It was exactly my thinking in that, actually. I know in our quite archaic industry of real estate, actually, I think some of these, I guess, automated or digital systems and whatnot will just aid efficiency and support the tasks that will always perhaps be required. I think in certain other industries, I think that there will be much more of a severe impact. But I know in our case, we're looking at a new CRM system, which for 15 years the business never had.
Mm.
And it's always been Excel, Word, spreadsheets, documents, you know, quite a historic system, filing database, and actually to pull that together now is a hugely valuable tool to improve just our day-to-day work experiences, really.
So I think you've gone where I'd like this answer to go. So the negativity, everybody likes a headline, don't they? You know, what are we going to do in the future? But the question we wanted to take in, I think, Julia, Nick, you kind of have already started this, is how could this positively shape the workplace of the future? So education aside, learning aside, for your day-to-day role, this is good, is it not?
I think in terms of efficiency, 100%.
So what skills do you need in the future when it's less task-related? Where will the skills be?
Creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to What it will do is it will mean that you have more time to shape your ideas and develop your ideas.
Time.
Yeah. You're more productive and it gives you more time to be creative. I don't think there's anything to be scared of.
I think some of the fear is generated from the pace of change. So if you look at, I mean, cities like Leeds, you know, grew off the back of the Industrial Revolution, and you know, jobs were culled in quite large numbers, but different jobs were created. And I think, but it happened over an extended period of time, whereas now it's happening at such a faster rate. You know, digitisation of services, you know, people thinking about doing things in an entirely different way. We've got us, through the 90s, we're known for all of the particularly financial services call centres. You know, many of those tasks will be automated and have been automated, and you can do it all on your phone. The question is, what do you do with those people? And I think that's the bit that I think sold well could be really exciting. It's, what are we doing? And it all comes back to how you're dealing with customers and how are their trends changing and are we adapting quickly enough? And I think that's the exciting thing.
I think there's going to be different challenges for different industries, isn't there? Because all of us, to a degree, are in kind of professional services. So actually, the thing that our companies have all invested in is us and our skills. So we're looking at it from our own perspective. Great, that might free up some of my time to do the creative thinking, to do this, to do that. But for some people, I mean, it will be jobs, won't it? And that's the harder conversation. So if you're employed by a call centre and they can automate some of you, is that employer necessarily going to think, great, now I'm going to develop my workforce? Mm-hmm. Or actually, sorry, bye-bye workforce.
No, it's a valid concern, and it probably does lead on to, unless anybody wants to throw anything else into that, it does lead on to the next and final question we want to ask you, is around the workplace and mental health. So the quote here is that over 50% of workplace absence is caused by stress and mental health issues. Can we believe that? Do we see that?
I think stress can lead to getting a cold, stuff like that. So I think it could, I think it depends how you look at it, doesn't it? But I think if you can put into a box various, I don't know, illnesses that might mean you don't go into work, or the fact that you've had a bottle of wine because you're stressed means you're not feeling great the next day. I think it could lead into that way, maybe.
I think this is perhaps a combination of the first two points, in that the office environment, the workspace, the culture, all of those things alongside the systems, the data and the whatever else it is that supports them doing their job, if it's more challenging and difficult and the workspace environment and culture isn't great and doesn't lend itself to working from home, that kind of thing, then that's going to have that knock-on effect with this stress and mental health, I imagine. So
yeah. I mean, if you don't feel comfortable being able to say to your boss, I'm going to work from home today, instead you'll just say, I'm not coming in today, I don't feel well.
Yeah, so then you are falling into this category,
which is exactly that.
Yeah, and it might not be the real reasons.
Yeah,
I think there's another bit at play, which is the quality of leadership and management. I mean, there's a great link between leadership, good leadership, and management and productivity. I think sometimes in this country, I think we haven't quite got it right yet. So I mentioned presenteeism before. You know, in what sane world is presenteeism something we should endorse? But we do. Well, we don't endorse it, but we accept it.
Well, we actually, to a degree, it goes back to schools. So right from primary school age, kids are effectively being measured on, are they turning up with authorised or unauthorised absence? And that's a ridiculous system, because in the same way we're still putting them in ties and blazers, and I'm looking around not seeing any of you guys wearing a tie today. Yo, you've got one in your pocket. What's the good are we sending out to a 5-year-old that says you will show up to school every single day in, day out, doesn't matter how you're feeling, what's going on in your personal life, and if not, you know, ridiculous at my daughter's school, they get a certificate if they have 100% attendance for a term. And I say that's kind of accidental in my house, that she's just not got a stomach bug that term, and therefore, well done, you've made it to school. So presenteeism, you're correct, is as big an issue economically as absenteeism.
Thank you. That's been really, really great to listen to that. There's one last thing I do want to ask you, though. What's your favourite thing about working in Leeds? So, what's the good stuff?
Well, personally, I love it. I've got a lot of friends that work in town. I can go and meet them at lunchtime. It's quite a close-knit city, quite a compact city. And yeah, it's the social aspect for me that I think is the best.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the geography, as you say, of the city, it's not this massive thing. Well, which side of London are you? It's 3 hours to get across to you, sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, I love that. Anybody else?
Yeah, leading on with that is probably the accessibility and the sort of network and the connectivity that is drawn into Leeds. You know, from a wide geographical perspective, you know, the train station's right in the heart of the city. People, you know, come in from afar. And then, as Tom said, the compact nature of the city lends itself, and you know, the bar and restaurants, leisure scene has skyrocketed alongside the retail environment. We're short of a few public open spaces, parks and that sort of thing, but there's a lot of those that being addressed through new schemes that are coming forward. Again, like Tom said, the network and the connections also is a key feature.
I think I've been working in Leeds for 20 years now, which feels like forever, but it isn't. And I just think how it's changed in that time, how it's more confident now than I've ever seen it as a city, and I think it's a great place to work in. And I was at an event a year or two ago, and there was a guy there. I'm looking around the table, probably not many people remember the advert from the 1980s about milk and the Accrington Stanley. So the guy that was speaking at this event was the guy that invented that advert, and he works for Google now. He said he brings the average age up by about 10 years, but he said he was coming to speaking to his daughter, he was coming to speak in Leeds, and she said, "Oh, Leeds, she lives in Brighton, what a cool city Leeds is." And I just think that's where it is now. We can genuinely say that it's a cool place to be. It really is a cool place to be, and that wasn't there even 5 years ago.
It's definitely got its swagger back, I think, as Leeds. You know, the rising inward investment's been a huge sort of, you know, part of the underpinning of that, with the Burberrys and the Channel 4s of this world.
Yeah.
And the tech digital scene is, again, sort of supporting that independent vibe as well across the city. That's, you know,
the last
makes
piece of the
really
puzzle is
to work
the football,
in
isn't it? Yes. Don't get wrong, there's still challenges we need to solve about inequality, but I think we're on that. I've got a council that totally gets it, and he's doing a good job leading that agenda.
But I think my favourite thing is the people, and I think it's that attitude of the city, in that sometimes we don't even wait for the top-down stuff to happen. We don't wait for government or even local government to enable something to happen. As we see, the fact that we're all here today talking about these issues, and from that, things, you know things will happen. And that's what the city is to me. It's just this great business community. And if we see something, whether it's mental health, first aid training, like we've got people campaigning in the city to make that law, but at the same time, we're all going out and getting ourselves trained and upskilling ourselves and making it happen now. So that's my favourite thing.
Mm. I agree with that. People definitely make the place. And it's a very diverse city. In some good and not so good ways as well, you know, inequality. But I think it's a very strong, you know, the connections between people is what makes it.
So I was going to say the sake of community and vibe, exactly the same for me. I think it's got a really nice feel to the place. I think it's really exciting what's happening here. It all fits together really well. Yeah. And you know, that we don't have brilliant, you know, parks or things like that. But, you know, the canal's 2 minutes away, and I really love the fact that, I mean, we're based quite near the station, so it's easy, but you can easily pop along there. It's just lovely. It just gets you away. It's just a really nice space, and yeah.
For me, it's the DIY attitude that people have, and the get up and go attitude of the young people here, because not in every city are young people willing and ready to create opportunities for themselves. And I think the young people here are really, really good at that. Making things from nothing and doing it all themselves.
So, do you know what a lovely way to wrap it up? Thanks. Yeah, do you know what? So, that's been fantastic. So thank you. Really, really interesting listening to this. It's a bit weird because I'm now going to talk to people that aren't in the room, but if you've been listening to this and you've got a thought and an opinion, then get in touch. You know, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well. But just a massive thank you to you guys and sharing your thoughts on it. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're done.